This is Hugo Disler from Farming Secrets. We have had the pleasure of interviewing or listening to John Bedwell from Clunes in Victoria, which is north of Ballarat in a relatively high rainfall area, and Victoria is a part of Australia. So we just welcome all the guests who are on this call. And John, you're there, John?
Yes, got a copy there, Hugo.
John, you might like to introduce yourself as to what sort of farming you're doing and the activities on the farm, and just a brief history on yourself.
Sure. Well, I guess we're a mixed farming enterprise. Historically, we've concentrated on commercial cattle, Angus. Running up to 500 head over the last 4 years, I'll say. We've increased our cropping program, so we're cropping upwards of 1,000 acres. This year we started playing with pasture cropping, as you saw in the DVD. We started, 3 years ago, playing around with biological inputs. I think we started with trying to replace MAP with guano, for instance, through the cedar. I then did a course with Elaine Ingham, which was very beneficial, and started the process of trying to manufacture compost tea at home. And for the last, this year, has been our highest production of compost tea. We certainly have put out in excess of 100,000 litres. And we're seeing some benefits. Hugo mentioned we're in a relatively high rainfall zone. We're certainly suffering the effects of this continuing dry spell, even though we've had probably 6 inches in the last 2 or 3 weeks, which is very unseasonal and not terrific for the cropping program. But I guess I'm starting to sound like a whinging farmer there. But, that's a brief history of what we're doing, and certainly trying to integrate biological inputs into our cropping program and into our pasture improvement. Does that help at all?
Wonderful. John, what was the thing that has you move from a conventional way of farming to the way of farming now? What were sort of the factors that had you even look at it at another option in farming?
Cost. The purely simple cost. And I just couldn't see. We came out of very early on in this dry spell. I don't know whether people remember, but super was, fertiliser was relatively cheap. And when I say relatively cheap, it might have been $150 a tonne. And during that first couple of years of drought, everybody sold their livestock, and so to maintain some level of production, they were faced with a cropping program, or trying to use their land in some fashion to generate an income. And so the increased demand saw the price of fertilizer skyrocket. I think it was masked as being world demand, but in reality, I believe it was just pivot playing a profit-taking exercise, and I was fairly disgusted and dishevelled by that, and felt that I needed to look at other avenues to produce a crop, and certainly we're not replacing fertiliser at this point in time, but I would hope in the coming years we can drastically reduce our fertiliser or our inputs, and hence our costs. So that's what started the journey.
Had you sort of learned that there was another option other than the conventional way of farming?
Well, I guess through the Elaine Ingham course, I was aware of alternative type of fertilisers, but I never really investigated necessarily an alternative way of farming. I was purely after the cost benefit to our farm of reducing what I could see as spiralling input costs. So the compost tea workshop that Elaine originally marketed was along the lines of produce your own fertiliser or something like that, and that's what generated my initial interest. Does that help?
Yeah. No, because, John, it is extraordinary to have a farmer change from or take steps to move away from the conventional way of farming. That's why I said ask that question.
Yeah.
But you've answered it fairly well. Well, you've answered it well. Now, the
Hugo, if I could expand on that a little, because I don't think from certainly my peer group that I work with in our local community and I guess the generation that that I communicate with, I think most farmers are fairly open to alternatives, you know, and are looking for ways to improve productivity as well, and they can see that the previous farming methods are falling short. So, you know, I think there is a general acceptance that we need an alternative. So I certainly wouldn't, you know, brand our method of farming as being too far left of what general farming practices are doing.
Yes, no, I'll go along with that, because in the years when I was selling natural fertilisers, it was just I was just amazed at how many farmers were already doing natural things, alternative things, and still doing conventional things as well.
As well.
So you're right. There's a lot. There's just different sort of levels, you might say.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
John, you've done it now for 3 years. Can you give a bit of a history over that 3 years, how things have responded, and is there sort of a way that you could now fast-track that because you've got 3 years of experience?
Yeah, for sure. The first couple of years, and I think I guess that's why I'm here talking on the phone, Hugo. I can see that, you know, I possibly, the first couple of years' experience might help other farmers fast-track their experience and their results. Because I certainly started production, and I wasn't getting anywhere enough volume, in my belief, and hence what you saw in the DVD. We're trying to increase our production all the time. So, you know, mucking around in the mud with 44-gallon drums and things like that in the middle of winter needs to be avoided. And so, if people and farmers can get set up initially, then I think they'll have a far better experience. Yeah, and in terms of the results, I mean, I'm all the time searching for objective data that supports our decisions. You know, this year's yield won't be terrific, but certainly we're at least getting some oats off that are looking like they'll be sellable. A lot of our neighbours who are conventional farmers really are not getting the weights and not able to sell their product at all other than as feed, and the bottom's fallen out of the feed market with so much pinched wheat around at the moment. So, you know, we are looking, I would like to hang on to those results at the moment and try and say that they are supporting our decisions in applying compost tea, but I would have loved to have some better yields and, you know, better results to support it as well. So we're by no means, you know, a perfect farming model at this stage.
But what the two things fantastic, John. The two things that come up. The first thing is setting up the equipment. Your equipment is fairly elaborate in that you've got a concrete floor, you've got a sort of a roof over, it's a designated area. Now, that's a bit of investment as far as time, not much money. I mean, I'm not decrying the amount of money you spend, but it's not a huge outlay. Like, you're not buying a new header, for instance.
Definitely not. And in that first year, if you do take reduce your fertiliser investment a little bit, you'll offset those costs. And that's what we aimed to do all along, was that we reduced our fertiliser costs and spent the money on trying to produce compost tea. I think with a bigger budget, we might have maintained our fertiliser and our compost tea production until we had perhaps higher production as a result, and therefore could have fast-tracked some of the results. But we've always tried to level the two off, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And John, I just want to emphasise a point that with the setup that you've got, which can be seen on our DVD, it's exceptionally good setup. It can be expanded to get more volume. So because the so it's really worthwhile farmers to make put the effort into setting themselves up right from word go. Would you say that, John?
I would definitely.
Because otherwise,
say that.
I could be wasting a year or so of production, year of not producing enough compost tea.
Very much so. That is my feeling. That's why I'm on the call there today, to try and help perhaps other people have a better experience. Otherwise, I found in those initial years, I was walking around, or we were walking around some pretty awful mess, and it wasn't a great experience. So to spend a bit of time in preparing ourselves, we feel like we can improve the process and increase production as well. So I do strongly recommend that people have a look at the production method and try and keep it relatively clean in terms of a concrete floor. The tanks, I think that was another question we'll address later on, but the tanks and the area as clean as possible with a pressure washer where you can economically or efficiently do it. Yeah.
Another point that you mentioned, going back a few minutes, was that your oats will make a better grade than feed, and other farmers in your nearby area producing feed only. Would you put that down to the fact that you are working with compost teas? Is that sort of a result that is showing up for your efforts in working with the biology of the soil or working with compost teas?
Certainly like to think so. I would like to think so, yes. I can't say otherwise, because I don't have half the paddock in conventional fertiliser and the other half in our process, or in the process of adding compost tea. So I can only deal with the results that we're getting. But I'm not saying our production is the best in the district or anything like that, because there are other farmers producing good results. All I'm saying is that we seem to have a few more choices at the moment, whereas some other people have less choices. So, yeah.
John, the oats that you produced, what you talked about, or made mention of, is that on the... you're running two sections. You're running conventional farming, you're running pasture cropping. Which section did that come from?
This would come under conventional cropping. It's not a pasture crop paddock. So this is this particular paddock, which is, the first one we've stripped, is it's only its second year of cropping. But in saying that, we haven't applied any herbicides on the paddock, so the onion grass that's there, we've just let grow. The only thing we've done is this year we used 50 kilos of a product called Super Boost, which is like an organic, a dynamic lifter type product. We tried to put it through the air seeder, but it wasn't terrific. It didn't actually run all that well. So that paddock actually, if we were going to be organic, it's been grown with all organic inputs this year. But I can't quite remember the original question, Hugo, but it's as far as conventional cropping goes, this paddock didn't have any herbicide applications in it.
Now, you've got your farm pretty well divided in half as far as conventional and conventional crops and your pasture cropping. Can you describe how the conventional crops look like and how the pasture crops look like, and what's their potential? I know you haven't stripped, you haven't stripped them yet, have you?
No.
The
pasture crop paddocks, it's hard to generalise. There are some good ones. that the better ones tend to be the ones that have had a fertiliser history, believe it or not, so the ones that have perhaps had super applied to them in the past 10 or 20 years. The ones that we sowed without any fertiliser, just hoping that that something would grow, won't be stripped, obviously. So, and some of the paddocks, one that we sowed with fertiliser down the tube under a pasture cropping arrangement, we might get half a tonne off to the acre on an average. It won't compete necessarily with the conventional process of grain production this year. Given that this is our first year of pasture cropping, with our current experience under our belt this year, we will put fertiliser down the tube and certainly won't be sowing without fertiliser. So the conventional crops, it's a little bit hard to say. The wheat, some of the wheat hopefully will go a tonne. We don't know whether it's pinched yet or not. A tonne of unpinched wheat would be a pretty good result for us. And the oats are certainly going a little bit better than a tonne. And they've had 50 kilos of that dynamic lifter type of product with a couple of applications of compost tea. So they certainly haven't had a huge amount of fertiliser put underneath them. And I think some of the more conventional crops around the district that have had 100 kilos of DAP underneath them have looked really good and grown well, but suffered with the dry end of spring, and in particular 2 or 3 weeks in November where it was just like an oven and cooked the grain that was there, and hence everybody's got very high screenings and low weights. So, yes.
I was going to ask you what were the conditions that had made the crops not so good. Well, you just explained that. Yeah,
it was like an oven. I don't know whether people remember in November we had 3 weeks of extremely hot weather, and some of the paddock temperatures would have been around 40 degrees, and it's just cooked all the crops in our district. And I guess that's why... And a little bit of objective data we're holding on to is that the biological inputs hopefully will I won't say ensure us against these types of conditions, but certainly give us perhaps a few more choices and make the plants a little more resilient to these fluctuations in the weather, be it frost or severe heat. Mind you, we're still affected by it, as everybody is, but hopefully we can still hang on to a few positives.